හොඳයි පින්තුනි. සියලු දෙනාට තෙරුවන් සරණයි. සද්ධර්ම දේශනාව අන්තර්ජාලයට උදාහරණ වැඩ කටයුතු සූදානම් කරගන්නකම් අද සද්ධර්ම දේශනාවට පැමිණෙන සියලු දෙනා පංච ශික්ෂාවේ සමාදන් වෙන්න බලාපොරොත්තු වෙනවා. පින්තුනි සියලු දෙනා තිසරණේ සජ්ජායනා කරන්න. නමස්කාරය කියන්නේ ඔක්කොම ආයේ පාරක් හොඳට එක හඬින් හඬ නගා කියන්න. බුද්ධං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි ධම්මං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි සංඝං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි ဒုတိယံපි බුද්ධං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි ဒုတိယံපි ධම්මං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි ဒုတိယံපි සංඝං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි තතියම්පි බුද්ධං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි තතියම්පි ධම්මං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි තතියම්පි සංඝං සරණං ගච්ඡාමි සරණාගමනං සම්පුන්නං පානාති පාතා වේරමණී සික්ඛාපදං සමාදියාමි අදින්නාදාන වේරමණී සික්ඛාපදං සමාදියාමි කාමේසු මිච්ඡාචාරා වේරමණී සික්ඛාපදං සමාදියාමි මුසාවාදා වේරමණී සික්ඛාපදං සමාදියාමි සුරාමේරය මජ්ජපමාදඨාන වේරමණී සික්ඛාපදං සමාදියාමි තිසරණේන සද්ධින් පංචශීලං ධම්මං සාදුකං සුරක්කිතං කත්වා අප්පමාදේන සම්පාදේත Okay, please all be seated. Okay. We gathered here again today to listen to the Buddha's teaching, to take from it what we have in our infinitely long journey in samsara not been able to until this lifetime, and hopefully learn something, understand and comprehend. There's a difference between the two. To learn, in fact, there's a difference between all three of these things: to learn, to understand and to comprehend. Let us try and listen, open our eyes and ears, take in what is being spoken to you today, so that you may learn it. And if you learn something, then you're able to reflect on it. You're able to remember. You're able to revise, review. And if you understand something, you're able to use your intelligence to check if this agrees with your view of this world. And then finally, to comprehend is to be able to instill this Dhamma in your hearts and in your minds in such a way that no matter who comes and tries to falter your understanding, it doesn't matter. Even if the Buddha comes and says, "Hey, all those things I taught you, that's all false. Just forget all of that." If you really comprehend this Dhamma, you will even be able to challenge the Buddha. It is with that conviction, it is that conviction that will help you cross this ocean of samsara and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. But as always, before we commence, we must always be mindful and understand that it is the Lord Buddha's Dhamma that we have the privilege today of listening to, understanding and comprehending. And it is because of that great human being, the unequaled one, the unparalleled one, the perfect one, the peerless one, who sacrificed an entire lifetime in his samsara for our salvation. So therefore, before we commence, let us pay homage to the Lord Buddha. And let us open our hearts and minds. May the Buddha enter our hearts and our minds. And may we be able to seek his homage so that we are able to comprehend this Dhamma and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Also, before we begin, let us take a moment to reflect on the fact that throughout our journey in samsara, we have come past many countless people, devas, humans, some of them who may be demons and spirits today, preta worlds. We've come past lots of people, to keep it quite simple, lots of people. In fact, there's not a single person in this room that has not been your mother or your father at some point in this samsara. So we are all connected, we are all interconnected. And therefore, before we listen to the Dhamma, it is our duty and our obligation to pay that sense of gratitude, to have that sense of gratitude to all these people that we've come past, and to allow them this opportunity, the opportunity that we have today, the privilege that we have today to listen to the Dhamma. Let us open our homes, these places, the temple, this hall. Let us open this up. Let us give them all this opportunity to join us, to listen to the Dhamma, and may they also find the happiness that we are all attempting to find in our lives by listening to this Dhamma. So as I now invite the devas, the brahmas, demons and spirits, And those beings that are no longer with us, our relations, our relatives in our previous lives, I want you all to also extend that invitation now to all of them. May they all join us. May they all listen to this Dhamma, and may they also achieve the noble attainments of Sotapanna, Sakurdagami, Anagami, and Arihat.
Samanta chakravalesu atantra gacchantu devata sadhammam munirajasansa sunantu sagmokkadam Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta
Finally, before we commence, I want you all, each of you individually, to make a promise to yourself, to make a firm determination that before the end of this sermon, through the course of this sermon, may any locks that prevent me from opening the doors to Nibbana be unlocked through the course of this sermon. If there's anything that I haven't been able to understand, anything I haven't been able to comprehend so far that has hampered my journey to enlightenment, to the supreme realization, may those questions be answered today, may those doubts be cleared today, and may I be able to attain the noble attainments of Sotapanna through the course of this Dhamma sermon itself. And if there's anyone here who has already attained the noble attainment of Sotapanna, may they be able to attain the attainments of Sakurdagami, Anagami, and Arihat. So please take a moment to make that solemn promise and that firm determination to yourself. Okay. There's a reason that before I sit on this seat, I worship the Buddha. It's not to show off. It's not to make you think, oh wow, look at that monk. Isn't he good? Because you might not see most people do that, or other monks do that. And so perhaps some people might think, well, this monk is more, he's better, he's a good monk, and everyone else is not so good. Never fall into that delusion. Never. If your mind tells you that, if you feel that one monk is better than the other, then there's something wrong in the way that you look at monks. I want you all to understand that a monk or a hamduru or a swamin mahanse is not the physical body that survives within this robe. When you look at a monk, when we go for alms at the monastery that we live in, we come down from our quarters because it's not a level land, and those of you who might have visited us will know this. We come down for alms with our alms bowl on Pindapatha, so on alms, on our alms round. And then as we approach the people that have come to serve us food, it is always such a pleasure to see them standing by these dishes waiting to serve rice and curry and papadums or whatever it is that they might have brought to serve us. And I sometimes listen to them. In fact, I always listen to them. My eyes and ears are wide open. I'm only looking at my alms bowl, but I can hear everything they say. Sometimes they start chanting, murmuring. very silently. They're not trying to show off to the world, but they're chanting for themselves. And they say things like, Obohansita Vahavaha Nivan Shanti Saklabeva Nibbahana Paramasukhen Sukhitaravetva. May you be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana very soon. This is what they say when they serve food into our alms bowls. And usually at our monastery, and of course you'll be familiar with this as well, when you offer alms at the temple, at the end of that ceremony, at the end of the occasion, a monk will normally do a punyanumodana, which is to transfer merits to all those who are looking to rejoice in the merits that you have gathered by offering alms. Something that I always remind the people that come to our monastery is that, how do you know? And I ask this question very openly. In fact, I'll ask you now. If you measure me by the things that I do right now in front of you, are you sure that that is a true measure of who I am? Do you think you are getting to see a full picture of the way I conduct myself? How do you know how I conduct myself when I'm not in your presence? When I go back to the monastery, how do you know what I do? I could be doing all the unwholesome deeds, the dasa kusala. How would you know? I could be coming here on a Sunday, dressed in a robe, in a very calm and collected manner, with this vatapate in my hand, this winnowing fan in my hand, and walk very calmly. And then to you, the observer, oh wow, what a monk. Isn't he such a great person? How do you know that? This is why I always remind them, never assess a monk, let alone a human being. How can you know if the person sat next to you is a sotapanna? How do you know that? How do you know if they're an anagami? How would you know? Can you tell? Are they going to start emitting rays from their body as soon as one becomes a sotapanna? No. Are people going to start levitating as soon as someone becomes a sakurdagami or an anagami? And start flying? No. These noble attainments, sotapanna, sakurdagami, anagami and arihat, are purely levels of comprehension. It's an understanding of life, of themselves, of the Dhamma. Seldom does it actually make a change to the physical body. In fact, in the time of the Lord Buddha, you might have heard of a Rahatan Vahanse called Pilindavaccha. Pilindavaccha Maharahatan Vahanse. The reason he was given that name was because of the way that he spoke. The way he spoke was by using this word called Vasalaya. Hey Vasalaya, Mena. That's how he spoke. It's like, you, useless fellow, come here. Hey you, idiot, come here. That's how he would speak to people. So sometimes people would observe this monk and go, that's an arahant? Really? Sometimes they would go and shout at him. They would go and complain to the Buddha. Why is it a monk of, you know, why is one of your disciples behaving in this manner? It's shameful, disgraceful. See, this is because even an arahatun vahanse has what we call vasana klesha. Vasana klesha is what you've been practicing in your life before you became an arahant. Sometimes for many births in this samsara. There was one arahatun vahanse who, as he was walking along for alms, when he would see a puddle, he would jump over it. Again, people would observe him and go, that is not right. Look at him. He's not calm and collected like other monks. He's jumping over puddles. How can a monk be like that? I mean, how can an arahant be like that? And then they would go and complain to the Buddha. But they were all mistaken. Because they were all trying to assess and gauge an arahant by the way he looked, by the way he assessed, by the way he walked and talked, And the way he conducted himself, moved his arms and legs. What I want you to understand is that is not how you assess or gauge someone's understanding of the Dhamma. The only way to do that is to let them speak. If you have questions, ask them. How do they describe anicca, dukkha, anatta? How do they talk about the essenceless nature of this world? Do they encourage you to continue living a luxurious life and enjoy the sensual pleasures? Is that what they preach? Do they tell you to go into the heavens and go and spend a lovely life there and enjoy all the sensual pleasures in the heavens? Or do they say, there's not one place, there's not a single place in this entire universe where you can find supreme happiness? How do they describe anicca? Do you feel that when they describe anicca, dukkha, anatta, that they have understood it for themselves? Or at the end of that conversation, you are confused, and the person that tried to explain it is even more confused than they began? Have you never been in that situation? Someone tries to explain something to you, and at the end of that conversation, the person trying to explain to you is more confused than they started. Now you have two confused people. This is the only way that you can at least try and attempt to assess if someone has understood the Dhamma. But why do you need to assess if someone has understood the Dhamma? Is that important? If I am a sotapanna, I'm not saying I am. If I am a sotapanna, does that make you a sotapanna? If you are all anagamis, does that make me an anagami? No. If that were the case, everyone that listened to the Dhamma from the Buddha would be arahants. Remember, at the end of the first sutra, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutra, what percentage of human beings attained Margapala? There were five of them. One attained Sotapanna. 20%. From someone observing it, that would be a complete failure. Only 20%. So one in five attained Sotapanna. Everyone else started as being a Pruthakjana, ended Pruthakjanas. It was only at the next sermon, Anattalakkhana Sutra, that everyone then later on became Sotapannas, and through the course of that became Arahants. So it doesn't really matter what Margapala, what level of understanding the person that you are discussing the Dhamma with has. However, having said that, if you want to become a Sotapanna, then you have to listen to Dhamma from at least someone who is a Sotapanna. Only a Kalyana Mitra can be a noble associate, a Kalyana Mitra to somebody else. Because it's only a Kalyana Mitra, it's at least someone who is a Sotapanna that has understood the Dhamma in such a way that even if a Buddha came back into this world and said, "Oh, I'm really sorry. You know what I said about anicca? I got it all wrong. Actually, this world is nitya. This world is to your liking. So you should enjoy yourself in this world. Sensual pleasures are what's best to be gained. Go, enjoy yourselves. Have fun." Even if a Buddha came into this world, if a Buddha were to come into this world and tell you that, you need at least a Sotapanna to stand up to that and say, "No, I don't care who tells me, I am not ready to accept that." This is why you may have heard, when we describe a Sotapanna, we use the words Parapratya Rahita, if you heard this phrase in Sinhala, which means you don't need a teacher anymore. The Dhamma becomes your own teacher. Well, for the Dhamma to become your own teacher, you have to have the Dhamma in the first place. If you don't have the Dhamma, then you need a teacher to what? Give you the Dhamma. A Kalyana Mitra can only take you to the water. He can't make you do what? Drink the water. You have to drink the water. So through these sermons, the only thing we are trying to do is to give you the Dhamma, to help you. We can help you listen to the Dhamma. I can keep waking you up every time you fall asleep. And that's perfectly fine. I told you this at the last sermon. I'm I don't have the tiniest modicum of anger or ill will towards you if your eyes start to shut. It's a very hot day today, and if you're here straight after lunch, then it's going to be incredibly difficult to stay awake, and that's perfectly fine, because I know your bodies are not to your liking, are they? Is it? Is your body to your liking? Can you control everything that happens in your body? No. If the conditions are lined up in such a way that it's now time for your eyes to shut, what do you think is going to happen? Your eyes are going to shut. That is not to your liking, it's not to my liking, but that's the way the world works. So what we need to try and do is, if it's only by listening to the Dhamma that we can attain a margapala, sotapanna. The rest of it you can do by meditation. Remember, you can't meditate and become a sotapanna. I want you all to very clearly understand that fact. There's not one place in the Tripitaka, if you accept that the Tripitaka is the Dhamma that is true, there's not one place in, one might say, well, why should I accept it just because it's in a book? There are two people that do this by meditation. Two types of people that can understand the Dhamma through meditation alone. Who are they? Paccheka Buddhas and Sammasambuddhas. Paccheka Buddhas and Sammasambuddhas don't have a teacher. Without a teacher, they understand the Dhamma for themselves. But that requires the completion of paramitas, the 10 perfections, throughout an extremely long time in samsara, to have guided other people, to have come looking for the truth, to have ventured in this samsara looking for the truth. It requires an intense amount and sacrifice to get to that point. Well, some of you might actually believe that you want to be a Buddha someday, and there's nothing wrong with that. I wish you all the best. Some might say, I want to be a Paccheka Buddha. I wish you all the best. Do I want to be a Sammasambuddha? Never. Do I want to be a Paccheka Buddha? Oh, no. I'm not prepared to go that far in samsara. I've come far enough. I've traveled long enough. I'm exhausted. I don't want to go one more life in this samsara before I complete this journey. That's not to say that I will complete this journey by becoming arahant, but that is my ambition. And I hope that is your ambition as well. But still, among you, I mean, there's a monk that is with us at our monastery, and he tells me that his wish is to become a Supreme Buddha. And I wish him all the best. Because there's always going to be people like that. When the hermit Sumedha was at the feet of Lord Buddha Deepankara, and he made an affirmation, I want to be a Sammasambuddha. If the Buddha turned back and said, you foolish man, what are you thinking of doing? Do you realize how much further you have to go in samsara to become a Supreme Buddha? Forget about it. That's a really stupid and foolish idea. Forget about it. Do you think that would have been fair? No. What hope would have been there for us if we had done that? Each of you will have your own ambitions, whether that's worldly ambitions or mundane or supra-mundane ambitions. And I want you all to hold on to them. But I always want you all to keep your eyes and ears open, because you don't know what paramitas you are fulfilling today at this moment. You don't know throughout samsara whether you came this far with a determination to become a Sammasambuddha. It may be the case. It may be the case that you will attain Nibbana by becoming a Paccheka Buddha. But it may also be the case that you will attain Nibbana by becoming an Arahatta Buddha. So always keep those doors open. Keep your options open. And just listen to the Dhamma. Understand the Dhamma. Practice the Dhamma. And whatever the fruit will come out of it, so be it. I was telling you about, why do I come and worship at the Buddha? That's what I started speaking about. I venerate the Buddha three times. First, In my heart and in my mind, I worship Him and I remind myself that it is because of Him that I have this Dhamma today. It is because of Him that I live a life that's leading me towards the supreme bliss of Nibbana. It is because of Him that I was able to find a path to release myself from the shackles of samsara. You are the greatest. You are the perfect one. You are my master. You are my teacher. Secondly, my second veneration is I ask for His permission to bear the Dhamma. Who taught me the Dhamma? The Buddha taught me the Dhamma. Where did this Dhamma come from? From His mind, His wisdom. He was the fountain of this Dhamma. So I ask for His permission to bear this Dhamma. And then finally, my last veneration is I remind myself that each and every one of you have been a father to me, have been a mother to me, have been a brother, a sister to me. And in this lifetime, after having become a monk, I think I told you this last time, in last week's sermon. Before I became a monk as a lay person, my mother and father attended to all of my needs. They fed me and washed me and clothed me and gave me medicines when I was ill. But now it's not them that do all of that. It's you that do all of that. You attend to all of my needs. You feed me. You gave me this robe. You gave me my alms bowl. You offered me pirikara, medicines when I'm ill. It's because of you that I'm able to practice this path. You work hard so that I can be happy. The last time two people did that, I called them mother and father. Then they sacrificed themselves for my happiness. That's what I call them. So today, you work hard, you go do your jobs, you travel on buses and trains and go and spend hours in your workplace. And when you have saved enough money, when you have found some free time, you come to the Aramaya, to the monastery, and you offer dana to the monks. So it's because of you that I can live a life like this. So you are all my mothers and my fathers. And so my last veneration is I ask Him, may this Dhamma that I'm about to preach today help my parents, my mothers and fathers who are sat in front of me today, for them to be able to attain the fruit of Sotapanna. May they be able to attain the fruit of Sakurdagami. May they be able to attain the fruit of Anagami and Arahat. And may they be able to release themselves from samsara. This is why I do that. And I'll do that every day. Before I sit on this seat, I will do that every day. Even if there is no statue here, there will be a statue in my mind, and that is the statue of the Buddha. It's not a statue. I mean, why do we worship statues? Are we idol worshippers? Are Buddhists idol worshippers? Do you think there's really a Buddha there? That's just bricks and stone and cement and paint. Where's the Buddha? Is this the Buddha? Or is that the Buddha? Which one? Were there two Buddhas? There was only one Buddha. So which one of these is Buddha? Is either of them the Lord Buddha? No. Where does the Lord Buddha live? How do you see the Buddha? Through the Dhamma. Yo dhammam passati, so mam passati. To see me, you have to see the Dhamma. It is only through the Dhamma that you can see the Buddha. And this is not seeing the Buddha through your eyes, through your physical eyes I'm talking about. Through your mind's eye. As in through your wisdom. You see the Buddha through wisdom. Who is a Buddha? Really simple question, hopefully, as Buddhists. I mean, come on. We're all Buddhists. We should know who the Buddha is. Otherwise, who have we been following all our lives? That will become a really embarrassing question to ask. I mean, say someone, a non-Buddhist, approaches you. He comes and asks you, hey, mister, I'm a Catholic, or I'm a Christian, or I'm a Muslim. I gather that you're a Buddhist, and I understand that your teacher is the Lord Buddha. Who is the Buddha? What's the answer you're going to give? What is the answer you're going to give? Have you never faced this situation? Thankfully. Who is the Buddha? Usually the answer that we give is, well, you know, there was a prince called Siddhartha. He lived many thousands of years ago, 2,500, 600 years ago. And he was born in India, or wherever you believe he was born, it doesn't matter. And then he, at the age of 30, he renunciated his lay life, and then he went and he was an ascetic for 6 years. And then he says, no, I'm not asking about his life story. I'm not asking you to give me a biography about the Buddha. I'm asking you, who is the Buddha? How do you define a Buddha? Is a Buddha a human being? Do you remember once after the Buddha, once the Bodhisattva became a Buddha, someone comes and asks him, Gautamayan Vahansa, Vahansa Kauda, who are you? Are you a human? Are you a Deva? Are you a Brahmin? Are you a Brahma? Are you a Yaksha? As in, are you a demon? What answer does he give to all this? No, I'm not a human, I'm not a Deva, I'm not a Brahma, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a demon, I'm none of those things that you just said. Now if you, I'm pretty sure you would have come across this occasion where, I mean, at least you might have read it in a book where someone goes and has this conversation with the Buddha. So and he says, no, I'm none of these things that you just spoke of. He says, I'm the Buddha. So what is the Buddha then? It appears that a Buddha is not a human. What is a Buddha then? Can you become a Buddha? Can you? Can you become a Buddha? Yes? Great. Three types of Buddhas. Sammasam Buddhas, Paccheka Buddhas, Arhatta Buddhas. Can you become an Arhatta Buddha? Yes? Yes. Can you become a Paccheka Buddha? Can you become a Sammasam Buddha? Yes. Well, great. The Buddha, before he became a Supreme Buddha, what was he? He was a human. He was a prutagjan, a mundane, worldly person. I mean, that's the closest translation I've found of prutagjana so far. If you find a better term, please share with me. I'll use that for now. A mundane, worldly person. See, this is why I think last week we had this chat after the sermon. To try to give this Dhamma in English is extremely hard. Because to convey the feeling within these words, to convey the deeper meaning within these words is so difficult. You know, the meaning of the word prutagjana is contained within the word itself. But to tell you it's a mundane, worldly person, I mean, what does that mean really, seriously? When you understand the meaning of the word prutagjana, and then I tell you the translation of that is a mundane, worldly person, you go, what? Is that the best you could do? This question I ask myself every day. But hey, we've got to work with what we've got, right? A prutagjana, I'll give you the term in Sinhala, and I'll give you the meaning for those of you who are able to understand this. Prutagjana, jana is to produce. Janita karana, you'll have heard this phrase. Vidyujjanaka, what's a vidyujjanaka? A transformer. Because it produces electricity. Janane is to produce. Pruta is potu. What is potu? How do you eat a banana? The peel. Potu erlana kan? Potu ekka ganada? Naha. Kehel geri kanne potu erala. So potu is the peel. To be producing peels. Now how does that make any sense? If I were to sit here and say the word prutakjana translated to English is a peel producer, you wouldn't come back and listen to the Dhamma again. You would go back saying that monk is a lunatic. A peel producer is a prutakjana. That's the direct translation. Now you see why I struggle. But when I give you the word prutakjana, you understand immediately what that means. A prutakjana, the characteristic of a prutakjana is something that we can understand if you just for a moment think about the composition or how a fruit is made. Let's take an example of a jackfruit. All seen a jackfruit? Yes. The jackfruit has the outer skin, the pricky bit. Yeah, it's got the thorns on it, and you have to be careful when you peel it. To get to the bit of the jackfruit that is tasty, that has value. I mean, have you ever seen someone selling the peel of a jackfruit? The outer skin of a jackfruit. Have you ever paid money for that? No. When you go to Food City, what do you buy? The jackfruit skin? No, you buy the muscular bit inside, right? That's what you pay for. That's the valuable bit. So to get to that, you have to penetrate through the foot, through the outer skin, through the inner skin, and then go deep within, and then you get to the fruit that is actually the edible bit. But the bit on the outside is what protects all of those things. So a potu janita karana kena or a prutakjana, their nature is that, if you again take the example of the jackfruit, does the outer skin of the jackfruit, does it have any understanding of how sweet the jackfruit fruit really is? Does it have any understanding of that? No. So if you are a prutakjana, you're like the person that's trying to protect from the outside. You have no idea what's on the inside. You have no idea how valuable what you're protecting is. So peel producer has no meaning, so I'm not going to use that term again. But that's what a prutakjana is. I'll bring it to you in real life terms. When people insult Buddhism, some people go mad, especially Buddhists. How dare you say something like that about my religion? If someone insults the Buddha, you'd go mad at them. How dare you say something like that? And it's the same with other religions as well. What do you think would happen if you insulted Prophet Muhammad? There'll be wars. Well, even among Buddhists, think about the times when there were problems in Kandy and, you know, in some of these places in Sri Lanka, recently in Ampara, I think. You know, we get to know these things not because I watch television. Because people that we associate, I mean, there were sermons that were organized in those areas which later got postponed. So we know. But what do they do? If you were a real Buddhist, do you think someone would be able to offend you? Who was able to offend the Buddha? If you went to the Buddha and started offending, you tried to offend him, if you started shouting at him, yelling at him, screaming at him, throwing all the offensive words you know at him, how much do you think you can offend him? How long do you think he's going to start crying? How many days is he going to have a long face and not talk to you again? He offended me. I don't like him again. Do you think the Buddha is going to be like that? No. So a true Buddhist A true Buddha cannot be offended. So if you can be offended, ladies and gentlemen, when someone insults the Buddha, if someone abuses a Buddha statue, you know, you'll have seen this. Some people go and desecrate the Buddha statues. Sometimes, you know, you'll see pictures on Facebook and things like that. You know, sometimes in Western cultures, people don't have the same kind of feeling towards the Buddha statue. So you'll see sometimes women clad in, little few clothes, and then they go and sit on the Buddha's lap. And they go and hug the Buddha statue. Now, if that offends you, I'm sorry to say, but the problem is not outside. The problem's with you. You've got the key to your own happiness and unhappiness. I think that's the first thing I said when at the first sermon that we had together. You hold the key to your happiness and your unhappiness. So if someone else can offend you, if someone came here and started insulting your parents, I know by your mother, she's a prostitute. Someone said that to you. If you're going to be offended by that, I'm sorry to say, you're still not a Buddha. Your father's a drunkard. He's a drug dealer. They come and offend you. If they can do that to you, then you're still not a Buddha. A Buddha cannot be offended. What's the difference between words that are abusive and a song in the way that you hear it? I'm speaking to you right now. I bring with me a radio player or a music player, an MP3 player, and I start playing a song. What are you actually hearing? And we talked about this last week, if you remember. Sorry, not last week, but the week before. All you're hearing are sounds. Do your ears pick up words? No, your ears simply hear sounds. This is why when you listen to a Russian, if you don't speak Russian, again I use this example as well, last fortnight, if you listen to a Russian speaking and you're just hearing sounds, because why? You can't understand what these words are, you can't make out these words. So to you, they're just sounds. If I ask you to write down each of the words that he said, you'd be, I have no idea. They're just sounds to you. So when we speak Sinhala, to someone that doesn't understand Sinhala, it's like it's just a song, it's just lots of words, it's just lots of sounds. So your ears can only pick up sounds. When you learned the language of English, or when you learned Sinhala, what did you do? Did you remove your ear and put in a new ear? Is that what you did? No, so you didn't change your ear, did you? So you see, your ear didn't change. You had the same ear. So it's not your ear that picks up what is being said. Your ear only picks up sound. So who then breaks these sounds into various words, and what process does this? That's your mind that does that. Your mind takes these sounds, it chops them up, slices them up, dices them, and puts it into little bits and pieces. And then each time you hear a sound, you go into your memory banks. Do you remember what we discussed this 2 weeks ago? How you can tell what I'm speaking? If I ask you to take a book and write down everything I say, you'll be able to do that. But that's because you speak English. And the way you do that is you listen to the sounds that I'm making, using my vocal cords, using my mouth. You listen to the sounds, and each sound that goes through your ears, your brain picks up. Your brain leaves an imprint of that sound on your mind, and then your mind goes into action. This supercomputer, that's your mind, goes into action. And it goes, every sound it takes, every bit of sound it takes, it goes into your memory bank. Do you know this sound? It comes back. No, it's just a sound. Then the second sound you make, you take the two together. Do you know this sound? No, that's just two sounds. I have no idea what it is. I can tell that one is do and the other is re. That's all I can say. I don't know anything else beyond that. So then for you to understand a word, when I speak the word mother, I speak the words mother, father. How do you know where to break the two up, and how can you distinguish mother from father? I just said mother, father. How do you know that these are two words? How do you know it's not Ma, and then the father. How do you know it's not mother, father? The. How do you know that these are not the two words that I spoke? In reality, only I would be able to tell you that, wouldn't I? Wouldn't that be the case? Because if I spoke those words, in reality, only I would be able to tell you which two words I spoke. But you, what do you do? You listen to these sounds, you know, m, a, the, a, the, You pick up these sounds, you put these sounds, you bring them together, you tie them up, you go into your memory banks and you check your memory. Do you know this sound? Do you know this sound? Do you know m, a, a, a? No. Do you know m, a, a, the? Oh, yeah, that I know. Okay, so that's mother. This is what your ears do. Sorry, this is what your mind does. So ears only pick up sounds. So likewise, how can then someone insult you, really? Because all you're hearing is sounds. What do? You don't stop at sounds. You process these sounds. You analyze these sounds depending on your memory, what you know about this language, about what you know about using punctuation. All these things you do in your mind, and you come out with, this guy just shouted at me. Your mother says, Vareng mehete, in a very loving way. Someone that gets into a fight with you says, Vareng mehete. Each of these are the same words, same sounds, but you process them in a different way. You gave each of these two different feeling. Now you perceive them, these two in two different ways. And therefore now you react to them in different ways. So I come back to the original question. Who is a Buddha? You thought I'd forgot it, right? Oh, he's forgotten it. He's not going to come and ask us again. Ah, no. Who is a Buddha? Why do you listen to the Dhamma? Do you not want to become a Buddha? Do you not want to become Buddha? Do you not want to become an Arahata Buddha at least? I mean, otherwise, how do you end samsara without becoming an Arahata Buddha? So how can you become something you have no clue about? I tell you, why don't you all study hard, work hard, and become Romfufu. Go become a Romfufu. You prepared to go and study hard and work hard to become a Romfufu? Are you? No, why? What the hell is a Romfufu? You don't know what a Romfufu is. So you can't say, oh yeah, I'd like to become one of those. Yes, please. One bag, two bags, three bags full, please. Yes, I'll have one of those. So if you don't know what a Buddha is, how can you become a Buddha? So I think the first step that we should all try to do is understand who a Buddha is. Fortunately, the meaning of the word is contained within the word itself. Bhavaya Buddha. Bhavaya Buddha is Buddha. Now this is using etymology. What is etymology? Etymology is the science of how words come into being. I mean, this if you look at, even in English, if you type in Google, type in the word define and colon, and then type the word you want. And then on Google it will tell you how that word came into being. Sometimes there will be a bit of Latin, a bit of French, a bit of Old English, and then all these three combine and it gives you the word that we use today. The way that we do this in Pali and in Sinhala is called Nirukti. You'll have heard the term Nirukti Patisambhidanyani. So this is a wisdom or a knowledge that a Buddha possesses. I'm not saying I'm a Buddha. Before you jump into any conclusions. A Buddha possesses Nirukti Patisambhidanyani, as in the knowledge to explain how words come into being to the fullest. Any word you throw at him, he'll tell you this is how that word came into being. But as you start your journey on the path to Nibbana, as you start, because, I mean, how is it that when you start your journey to Nibbana, you all of a sudden are able to understand the etymology of words? How does that happen? Where do you get this Pada Nirukti from? Because, I mean, you know, if you're curious, then this question should come into your minds. How is it that when you start to practice the Buddha Dhamma, all of a sudden you are able to give Pada Nirukti? How is that? The answer lies in the Dhamma itself. The Lord Buddha teaches us how the world comes into being. Paticca Samuppada. Paticca Samuppada, he uses dependent origination to describe how the world comes into being. Now, I didn't come here today to talk to you about a profound Dhamma, but it looks like this is what's coming out right now, so let's continue and see where this goes. But don't worry, for those who are new to these sermons, I promise you I'll leave you with something that you can take as well. Otherwise, we'll not see as many faces next week. But that's okay as well, isn't it? All this time I've been preaching to what? Laptops. I told you this the week before. Over the last year, most of my sermons were delivered to a laptop. And this monk here, Venerable Dharmadasa. In fact, the reason I started to preach in English was because Venerable Dharmadasa was with me when we were back in the UK. When Guru Amaru started preaching in Sinhala, Venerable Dharmadasa, having travelled to the UK at the age of 2, yes, spoke little Sinhala. The only Sinhala that he knew, he used to fight with his sister. That's all the Sinhala that he needed. That's all the Sinhala that he knew. So it was then my responsibility to try and translate, and, well, not necessarily translate, but to preach this Dhamma in English so that he was able to understand it. And this is how we started this program about a year and a half ago. And then eventually we started recording them and sharing them on Skype, and then on YouTube, and then Facebook and whatnot. And then, thanks to these gentlemen sat at the back, you know, they invited us to come and start delivering these sermons to a larger audience. So this is where we are. So the reason I'm sharing this story with you is I'm quite comfortable looking at a computer screen and speaking at it. But this is useful for you, because when you listen to a sermon face to face, when you have that opportunity, it helps you immensely to understand the Dhamma. Because when you have a monk or an Aryan Vahanse who preaches the Dhamma with compassion, in the hope that may you be able to understand this Dhamma, may you be able to realize Nibbana, that energy that is released into this universe, you know, you're the primary recipients of that when you're sat face to face listening to the Dhamma. So whenever you have the opportunity, and I'm not just talking about us, whenever you have the opportunity to listen to a monk face to face, please make use of that opportunity. Listening to sermons online is one thing, listening to, you know, YouTube CDs, yeah, it's fine. But if you have the opportunity, always take the time to listen to a sermon face to face, in person. Anyway, I come back. What is a Buddha? Don't worry, I'm not going to forget. So, Bhave Uddha. What is Bhave? Existence. Again, existence is a translation. I'm not satisfied with that term. I've got to be honest with you. Yes, existence is a term that's in books to describe Bhave, but for me it does not convey the meaning. But until I find a better term, I'll use that term. But I'll try to explain what this word existence means. What does Bhave mean? I'll use an example for that. Let's say there are two people. One guy is a really kind fellow. How do we know he's kind? Because when you meet him, when you associate him, he's always looking to help you. If ever he sees you in danger or in trouble, he'll come and help you. If he has something that you don't have, he'll always come and offer it to you. So you generally say that, you know, this is a kind person. Now, what else is this person? He's not just a kind person, is he? There are lots of other things that he is. He could be a father. Could he not? Is he just a kind person? No, he's a father. What about a loving person? Could he not be a loving person? Of course he could be a loving person. Could he not also be someone that is... Could he not be genius? He could be a genius. He could be a very intelligent person. So all these things are Baba. You know, again, I'll use the singular term so that it'll make sense to you in a much easier. We say Karunika Baba. You know, again, we're talking about the way that someone is, the kind of potential that person has. Nihatamani Baba. We use these terms, don't we, in general day-to-day life? So we are talking about the kind of person that this person is. But it's not just a person that this applies to. All beings, all living creatures have a Baba. Balu Baba. You know, when you're really angry with someone, and if someone's done something really bad, you say, Ballik pinnipa. Mukode balu edakaran. You'll have heard people say like that. I mean, they're not a dog at that point in time. But the thing, whatever thing that they've done, or the thing, or you know, whatever words they might have used, their actions are representative, or what he's demonstrating at that time are the qualities or the attributes of not a human being, of a tirisan or an animal. Nikam balu edakaranneta. So you will have heard sometimes people say, Nikam harakek wage hasirinnepa manusseyo. What do you mean by that? When someone says something really foolish, stupid, you say, don't behave like a cow. If you say that in English, that it doesn't have the same weight. Harakek wage hasirinnepa kiyuwama. The meaning is contained within that. I'll tell you why. The word haraka has a meaning. There's an etymology to why the word haraka is haraka. I mean, I remember when I was a really young child, I used to ask my parents, why is a cat called a cat? Have you never asked your parents this? Why is a dog called a dog? Why could it not be called a cow? What answer could you offer? Once I remember when I was in grade 9, I was in Sri Lanka at the time. And I asked my teacher, because this was a Sinhala lesson, and she was going through a lesson, you know, there was a classroom, about 50 students in the class, and she's teaching these words. And I get up, I raise my hand up and get up from my seat and ask her, Miss, ai me harakata harakadiya? She didn't find that funny. I got kicked out. So don't try that at school. But today I realize, today I know that things don't happen in the world by coincidence. There are reasons that determine why things happen. Ladies and gentlemen, everything is preconditioned. Not predetermined, as I explained to you 2 weeks ago, but preconditioned. For as long as you have the conditions, you get the result. The reason that a haraka or a cow comes into this world is not by coincidence. Haraya, what is haraya? It's the essence. Hara paddhatiya, saradharma. What is saradharma? I apologize for having to use this to use Sinhala today, but I'm using this for your benefit. There may be listeners online who might find that distasteful, but the purpose of this is to try and help you understand the Dhamma, not necessarily come and just deliver a speech in English. Well, what's the point of that? If you don't understand the Dhamma, then what's the point? Hara paddhatiya, sara dharma paddhatiya. So sara dharma is kind of a code of conduct. It's virtues. From time to time, people come into this world and they give us a code of conduct. They give us, they teach us how to live a virtuous life. For example, be kind to your neighbors. Don't fight with each other. Speak nicely. Respect your parents. Respect your elders. You know, all these things we are seeing less and less these days, right? This hara paddhatiya, this set or system of virtues, if someone comes and destroys that, haraya kaadanekena, kaaladana kila kiyanne mokak? To destroy it. And kaaladana kiyanne direct translation would be to eat. You can't eat as a code of conduct. So I can't use a direct translation there. But if you destroy it, if you damage that system that exists within society, you know, respect your fellow citizens, use good words, you know, don't shout, don't be respectful to other people, be kind to other people, be generous, respect your elders, respect your parents, respect your teachers. Again, as I say, less and less of it we are seeing nowadays. That's such a shame. But onnoy hara paddhatiya kala dana ekkena. Now what happens to this person? He becomes indebted to society. Why? Because of his conduct, society begins to suffer. People got along with each other because they abided by this code of conduct. They respected each other. They respected their teachers and parents. But when someone comes along and says, "Hey, who are parents? They're just, you know, another man and a woman. They brought you into this world, so it's their duty to look after you. They're not any special people. They're just another bloke and another woman. That's all they are. Who are you teachers? They're doing a job. It's their job to teach you. They're being paid to do this. So it doesn't really matter whether you respect them or not. It's their job they're doing. So put your feet up on the table. It's all right to do that. Put your feet up on the desk. You don't have to stand up when your teachers come into the class. What happens to society when you start doing this? All those values that this society was protected by begins to disappear. And the harmony that existed within society begins to disintegrate. And society starts falling apart. People don't respect their elders. People don't respect their mothers, their fathers, their teachers, each other, their neighbors. And now people start fighting with each other. The happiness that existed in society no longer exists. Why do you think people lead such a life so full of tension nowadays? Can you trust the person next door? Can you? Can you leave your key with the person next door? Can you leave your door open and go for a walk? Why? Because people don't respect each other. Nowadays, for as long as I can be happy, I can get what I want, I don't care what happens to the other person. This is the kind of, these are the new set of values that society lives by. So the people that introduce these new sets of values are the people, haraya kaadapu kattiya. Now that you have become indebted to this society, what happens to this person? They die and they are born as cows, harak vela ipadila. Now it's time to pay their debts. How does a cow pay its debts? Meat and milk. Then, kirenui masenui, nai gevano. So you could write home about, let's stop slaughtering cows, you know, that's such a bad thing to do. Poor animals, let's not do that. Good. Do what you can to prevent it if that's what you believe is the right thing to do. But for as long as people don't change the way that they conduct themselves, for as long as people go about destroying this value system that this society is protected by, do you think you can stop cows being born into this world? No. Some people, every month from their earnings, they put some money aside to save animals that are being slaughtered. Is that a bad thing to do? Of course not. It's a good thing. Do that. If you're doing it already, continue doing it. No problem. Some people put some money aside to stop stray dogs from, you know, to give stray dogs a home. Is that a bad thing to do? Of course not. You might ask, well, ai swamin wahanselata ehema karunawak nette. Why don't we do anything about animals being slaughtered? Why don't we do anything about stray dogs? Trust me, I do more than you do about stray dogs and cows being slaughtered. Anyone that preaches the Dhamma is doing a million times more than putting some money aside to save animals from being slaughtered. If you understand this Dhamma, you are a human today, but that cow that's a cow today that's paying debt to society through meat and milk was a human once before, in a previous birth. But that human being, when he was a human being, did not have the Dhamma. Because he didn't have the Dhamma, he conducted himself in a way that then eventually led him to be born as an animal. Apayata gilla neda harakek welai. So if you can be given the Dhamma to help save you from going into the hells, to stop you from becoming an animal, to stop you from becoming a cow, how many cows do you think I'm saving right now? Not cows today, but people, poor people. Not poor as in you don't have any money. You have more money than you could probably buy my monastery. I'm not talking about in that sense, but poor people who don't have the Dhamma. We give them the Dhamma so that they may not be born as a cow ever again. Because if you stop a cow being slaughtered in that birth, okay, you bring it home, tie it up at home, you know, keep it in your garden if that's what you need to do. What happens when that animal dies again? What do you think it's born again as? Another cow. Now who's going to save that cow? How many thousands of cows do you think I'm saving right now? How many thousands of dogs do you think I'm saving right now? How many millions of goats and pigs and all kinds of animals am I saving right now? Just by preaching this Dhamma to you. If you understand this Dhamma and realize and begin to think, use your intelligence and use your wisdom, I do not want to be born in the hells again. I do not want to be born a dog or a pig or a cow or any kind of animal again. And then you do what you need to do to prevent that from happening. Then will you ever be born a cow again? Will you ever be born a dog or a pig again? No. So all those cows and dogs and pigs that are yet to come into the world after your death, well, I'm saving all of them right now by stopping you from going and being born as an animal. And to do that, you have to understand the Dhamma. There is no other way. So, this existence is what I was talking about. Harak Bhava is a kind of existence. Existence because that's the kind of person that person is. At one point in time, he acts like an animal. I mean, have you seen sometimes when people get really angry? They behave like demons. Yakshya. You know, they smash things on the floor, hit people. If you can find a bat, you're ready to hammer someone with it, hit someone with it. You know, some people, when they go mad, they go really mad. They go completely out of control. That is a kind of existence that is in there, in that person, at that moment in time. But the following day, he goes to the temple and observes Sil. So where's the person that went mad the night before? Is he the same person? Is he a different person? But if you insulted him, if you made him angry again, well, it doesn't take much for him to become that person again. Because that bhavaya, that existence exists, lives within this person. ඒ ගතිය, those attributes, those characteristics are within this person. But jatiya is different. When he behaves like an animal, when a man behaves like an animal, then that jatiya at that moment in time is that of an animal. When he is really angry and is hitting everyone around him, shouting, you know, using foul language. I mean, you know, when sometimes when you'll have seen when people get drunk, they have no idea what they're doing, no idea what they're saying. You know, they'll insult everyone in the neighborhood. You'll have seen this, and some people do this. But the following day again, you know, when he's sober, he's fine. The same person goes to his neighbor and says, "Hey, I'm really sorry about what I said last night. I didn't mean it, I was just drunk." So last night there was what? Bimat Bhava. He was drunk. The drunk Bhava. Today, he's a good man. But it was Bhava that gave rise to Jati. So each of these different kinds of Bhava is what you go through in Sansara with. What are the different kinds of Bhava that you will have had throughout Sansara? I mean, they're countless. But if you bring it down, if you boil it down to four or five different things, what bhava do we have right now? Manus bhava, human existence. Deva bhava, Brahma bhava, Tirisan bhava, Pereta bhava, Asura bhava, Nirisatta bhava. So that's seven there. In each of these different worlds or realms of existence, you have these are why they are called realms of existence. Ekeka jati bhava. So in this birth, you are a manus, you have a manusa bhava that has given rise to manusa jati. So anyway, a Buddha is someone who has eradicated or uprooted all kinds of bhava. Therefore, a Buddha is never going to be born as what again? As anything again. Why? Because he's completely eradicated all kinds of bhava. He's eradicated manusa bhava. He's eradicated deva bhava. He's eradicated brahma bhava. Now do you know why when he was asked, "Are you a deva?" He said, "I'm not a deva." Doesn't a deva or a god have raga, dvesha, moha? Why do you think they were born a deva? Because of what? Attachment. Avidya tanha. Because of desire. Desire for what? A heavenly existence. If you have... Why do you think you were born human? Was that coincidence? No. You were born human beings because your desire, your attachment was for a human existence. That's not to say that in your previous life you wouldn't have demonstrated deva bhava. Of course you can do that. Hey, samarala rapi kyan? Aramanusa devi ekwa ge kyan? You know, you say that man is like a god, a living god. Sometimes you say this. How do you say that? When you see those qualities within that person. But you don't say that all the time. I mean, the same person could be angry. Etakota kiyanne ne deviyek wage kiyala. When he's really good, when he's kind to other people, when he's generous to other people, then you say, ara manusa deviyek wage. That man's like a living god. Or a god in human form. That's what you say. Annevelaya bhava paccaya jati una. The bhava was a heavenly or a godly existence that gave rise to jati eka birth kiyala ganna. Using direct translations, I don't know how far we can go with this, but we'll keep going for as long as we can. But I'm sorry, I will use the Sinhala terms, because otherwise these sermons will be pointless, I think. Because if I don't use the Sinhala terms, I'll just leave you with a load of English. You know, existence, what does that mean? Jati, what does that mean? I mean, birth is what is used in the dictionary. And when you say birth, the only birth that you can think of is what? A mother giving birth to a child. Is that the only kind of birth there is in this world? No. Jati, sanjati, okkanti, avinibbati, kandanam, patubhavo, ayatanam, patilabo, ayang uchatavaso, jati. ජාති සංජාති ඔක්කන්ති අවිනිබ්බති කන්දානම් පාතුපාවෝ ආයතනානම් පටිලාභෝ. I've already said 6 different kinds of births. See, this is why I repeat, I have to use the singular terms and hope you will forgive me, and I'll continue in that way. So, Bhavapachya Jati. Now, again, as I say, a Buddha is someone who has eradicated or uprooted all kinds of existence. So, once you have uprooted all kinds of existence, existence is what gives rise to birth. Bhavapachya Jati. So if you remove existence, can there be birth again? Can there be jati again? No. Annehanam bhava uddha. The one who has uprooted bhava, one who has uprooted existence, is a Buddha. Now there are, as I said, 3 kinds of Buddha. There's one kind of Buddha that can do it by themselves. There are 2. Sammasambuddha and a Paccheka Buddha. I'll use an analogy that will help you understand how these 3 work. Did you go to the New Year Games? Anyone took part in the New Year Games? Alut Avurudu? No? No? What were you doing at home? It's New Year. Anyway. You know how you kanamutti? Yes. So you take a stick and you tie a pot, a clay pot normally, onto a rope, on a rope, and then you hit it with a stick. Have you done that? Kanamutti? No? Have you? No? Where's childhood these days, people? Seriously. Now I'm going to tell you how you can understand how someone can become a Buddha in the same way that you play this kanamutti game. As you know, when you go to the Avurudutsave, you'll see that there's a kanamutti. Okay, so it's called a kanamutti because what they normally do is they take a piece of cloth and they tie it around your forehead, and your eyes are shut, so you can't see. Well, really, it shouldn't be called a kanamutti, it should be called a pottamutti. Well, who's a kana? Kana is one is blind in one eye. You can't be doing that game like this, because you can see the pot. So it really should be called pottamutti. Anyway, let's call it kanamutti. So you tie this, what can you call it? Anyway, a blindfold. So you blindfold this person, you give this person a stick, okay? And then usually what you do is you once this person is stood, you turn him round a few times. Parents, seriously, if you haven't sent your kids to do this yet, you must. Don't let them die without having played kanamutti. What kind of childhood is that? Okay, anyway, so play this kanamutti, right? So you turn this person round a few times, you rotate him a few times, and then you go, right, off you go. And he gets 3 chances. He whacks his stick once, hoping to hit this pot. So the aim of the game is to hit the pot and then break it. Once you've broken it, then you win the prize. Okay? So as in you crack the pot with your stick. So you take one whack of the stick, no luck. Second whack, no luck. Then you, obviously, third time, you want to be a little bit more careful. You've already exhausted 2 of your chances. This is your last chance. So you put on your thinking hats and you think, okay, right, let me do some math here. You do some calculus and you do some this, that and the other. Do you do like that? No, you just whack it again. And then your third whack and you don't hit the pot. That's it. That's your last 3 chances. This is how people generally try to become Buddhas. They keep whacking their stick. They don't hit the pot and they say, no, you can't become a Buddha. There is no Nibbana. I mean, you'll see monks say that. You'll hear lay people say that. And that's the state of affairs today, which is such a shame. But once in a while, there's a person that that hits this by chance. And then if you go and speak to that person and ask him, hey, how did you manage to do that? What's he going to say? He's going to say, well, listen, I'll tell you, listen. He says, you know when you turned me around and left me like that? What I did was I walked 3 steps forward. I then took 2 steps to the left. Then I turned 90 degrees east, walked 3 steps forward again, and I whacked and I hit. And then he says, if you do exactly that again, you will be able to do the same. Do you think that's practical? You know, his instructions were dependent on what? Where he started. If you gave him on another day, if you tied a different pot, at a different height, a different stick, different everything, if you repeated the same instructions, what luck do you think you're going to have? None. Again, it's just going to be by chance. So, this is why, if someone whacks and cracks that pot, they're usually not able to repeat. I mean, they can, they'll say, okay, this is what I did, but listening to those instructions, you're not able to do the same again. Now do you see why a Paccheka Buddha can't teach you how to become a Buddha? This is how a Paccheka Buddha becomes a Buddha, becomes a Paccheka Buddha. It's by chance. A story that you might have heard is how there was this king in a palace, and he was watching his servant using a pestle and mortar. She was grinding something with a pestle and mortar, and she had bangles on her arms, on her arm. There were a few bangles. I mean, she was a maid, a servant, right? So they were. She didn't have many. But this king, watching this servant from his quarters, could observe that there was a sound, there was a noise coming from her arm because of these bangles. As her arms went up and down, up and down, up and down, these bangles would cling against each other. And then that produced a noise. And then he was observing this and he was thinking, wow, that's a lot of noise for a few bangles. Now, his queen, who was observing the king at this point in time, became envious. She became jealous. She was looking at the king and then looked at the maid and thought, how dare you? Look at the maid. I'm your queen. Why do you look at other women when there's me? And so she quickly came into the kitchen, pushed the maid to her side, picked up the pestle, and she started to get on with the rest of the job. Now, again, the king continues to observe. So the queen has lots of bangles. Well, she's a queen, of course. Now, before there was just a little bit of noise because there were only a few bangles. But this time, the king hears a lot of noise. There's a huge noise now coming from the kitchen. Why? All these bangles going up and down. Clang, clang, cling, cling, clong, clong. And then the king thinks to himself, wow. With few bangles, there was that much noise. With all these bangles, there's a huge lot of noise. There's so much noise there. My mind is the same. With all these kleshas, these defilements in my mind, raga, dvesha, moha, the more I have, the more I'm going to suffer, the more I'm just going to be sounding like I'm just a lot of noise. What is the purpose of this life? What is the meaning of this? So I want to reduce the amount, the number of kleshas, the number of defilements I have in me. And if I can do that, I can eradicate the defilements that I have in me, then I can reduce the noise that I make. And he's not talking about the noise that he makes by, you know, with his mouth. He's talking about how his mind works. Don't you hear the noise in your minds every now and then? How your minds get frustrated and angry and jealous and all these defiling thoughts that you have? Raga, dvesha, moha. That's the noise he's thinking about. So it's these defilements that lead to that kind of noise, unsettled mind. So this is what I want to do. Remove these defilements. That was what then he contemplated on. A few hours, a few days goes by, and he becomes a Paccheka Buddha. Now if you go and ask him, how do you become a Buddha? What's he going to say? He's going to say what? Bring two women. He'll give you a list of things that you need. A shopping list. A pestle, mortar, one woman, another woman, bangles, a few more bangles. Oh, and a kitchen. This is going to be your shopping list if you go and ask a Paccheka Buddha how to become an Arahant or how to obtain Nibbana. Because that's how he attained Nibbana. There wasn't a method that he used. It was by coincidence, almost by coincidence. Of course, he had the paramitas, which enabled him to have that, which enabled him to focus his wisdom at that point in time and to penetrate this superficial event that happened and kind of see the meaning and the truth behind it. But for a normal human being, for a normal person, you need more than that. You need a path to follow. What path do we call this? The Noble Eightfold Path. Arya Ashtanga Marga. Now let's go back to the Kanamutti game. Once in a while there comes a person, a person who takes part in this contest. What he does is he realizes, he watches other people. Oh, they're just whacking their sticks, no one's having any luck. Once in a while one guy comes along and he whacks his stick and it's just by coincidence. If I go and ask him again, he's not going to be able to tell me how to do it. So he realizes, actually what I should be doing is taking off this blindfold first. Once I take off this blindfold, now what happens? Now I can see where the pot is. Now I see where the pot is. Do I need a teacher again? Do I need someone to show me how to walk to the pot? No, I can walk by myself. Fine, thank you very much. I don't need you to give me directions, because I can see where the pot is. I can see if my stick is long enough. I can see if my I can check for myself, is my stick hard enough? Is it rigid enough? And then I can walk towards it, and how many whacks do I need now? Just one. I'm not going to keep whacking on the way there, am I? If I can see the pot? No, I mean that's just a waste of time. Why? What good is that going to do? That's a Sammasambuddha. A Sammasambuddha removes his blindfold. Who says him to do so? Nobody says him to do so. That's why he's special. That's why he's extremely special. He realizes this is the way to do this. He removes his blindfold, then walks to the pot, gives it one whack, and the pot cracks. He wins. He exclaims to the world, I have won. I no longer have an existence. I'm no longer a deva. I'm not a human. I'm not a brahma. I'm not a demon. I am a what? I am a Buddha. So now if you want to become a Buddha, what should you do? If you now follow his instructions, what are his instructions? First step what? Remove your blindfold. When you remove your blindfold, what happens to you? Chakkum Udapadi. Aloko Udapadi. You open your eyes. Now you can see the world. Now you can see where the pot is. Now, can anyone come and fool you? Hey, that's not the pot. The pot's over there. Can someone fool you now? No. Because you can see it for yourself. That is a sotapanna. A sotapanna is someone who has seen Nibbana for himself. He hasn't attained Nibbana yet, but he's seen Nibbana. That's why it's Chakkung Udapadi, Jnanang Udapadi, Vidya Udapadi, Aloko Udapadi. Now he knows how to get to the pot. He knows that there's no point in whacking the stick on my way there. But people who don't understand this, what do? They start whacking their stick. What is this whacking? Meditation. This is why people, without a real understanding of what Nibbana is, what good is meditation going to do? It's pointless. Meditation can help you attain jhanas, of course. But none of those jhanas are going to be Arya jhanas. What is an Arya? Who is an Arya? These words are very powerful because the meaning of the word is contained within the word itself. Aren't you glad that you at least understand a little bit of Pali and maybe a little bit of Sinhala? How fortunate do you think you are? I'm never going to be able to explain the word Arya to someone who is not a native Sinhala or a Pali speaker. Riya, what is a Riya? Bus Riya? Riya kyan mukha? It's a vehicle, right? Riya is a vehicle. What do you use a vehicle for? To travel. Use a vehicle to travel. When you use the letter A in front of most words in Sinhala or Pali, what happens to that word? You get the opposite. Lassana. Okay, lassana becomes avalassana. Let's take sangvara. Asangvara. Nitya. Anitya. Nitya. Anitya. See, when you add the letter, when you just append this letter A, it becomes the opposite. So if you have Riya, which is a vehicle, then you use a vehicle to travel. When you put the letter A in front of it, what happens now? What is the meaning you're trying to convey here? Let's bring this vehicle to a stop. What's this vehicle that you've been traveling in, and where have you been traveling in it? Sansara. So now you're trying to do what? Put a stop to this vehicle. That's how you become an Arya. Riya, Arya Karana. So how does one stop this Riya? Well, before that, you need to understand why you need to do this. Then you begin to understand how to do this. So to understand how to do this, you need to first understand why you need to do this. And this is where you need to understand Ashvada Adino Nisarana. There was once a monk who approached the Buddha and he says, he was speaking with other monks, and he was kind of his philosophy in the time of the Buddha, one of his disciples, his philosophy was, he went around telling people, you see, these things called Ashvada, we don't believe in that. This world is not, okay, what's Ashvada? Ashvada is, pleasure. Pleasurable, okay? So he goes around saying, this world is not pleasurable. You can't seek any pleasure from this world, so it's pointless. The Buddha summons this monk and he says, you stupid man, he's speaking to one of his monks, when did I ever say that there is no pleasure to be sought from this world? And he says, well, that's what I thought you've been preaching. I said, no, that's not what I've been taught, what I've been teaching. What I have been teaching is, how do you penetrate this pleasure that you see on the surface, this superficial pleasure, penetrate it so you can see the suffering inside it, deep within it. I'll give you a really simple example. We talked about, okay, let's take this fan. Right now, this fan is giving you a pleasurable feeling. How so? Because it's hot. You're sweating. So when the fan's operating, your sweat is evaporating, and along with that, it's taking the heat that your body generates with it, right? And so you cool down, and so you're feeling a pleasurable sensation. But for you to feel that pleasure right now, what should your body be in the first place? Hot. You should be sweating in the first place, shouldn't you? If you weren't sweating right now, if you weren't feeling hot and humid right now, what good is a fan going to do? Nothing. The same applies for an air conditioner. What about a heater then? When do you use a heater? When it's cold. What good is a heater if it's not cold? No good at all. So if you're looking for pleasure to be gained from using a heater, what should you be before that? You should be cold. You should be shivering. You should be suffering. from cold? How can food relieve you from vexation? Vexation is what? Pelima. Pelina kirajanati. The closest the word I could find is vexation. If you can find a better term, then please share that with me. I'm not a master in English by any chance. I know enough to share this Dhamma with you and to try my best to give you this Dhamma. Like I said, I mean, I don't think even if I studied all the words in the dictionary, I'll still be able to give the same feeling that I can when I preach in Sinhala. But anyway, that feeling of that suffering is what we relieve when we go out and seek sensual pleasures from this world. Again, food, you can only seek pleasure from food when you're feeling what? Hunger. When you're not feeling hungry, when you're full, can you seek pleasure? Can you find pleasure in food? No, in fact, if you're really feeling full and someone brings you a plate of whatever it is that you like, normally, you go, what? Please take that away from me before I throw up. I mean, it's the food that you really like. Why are you asking this man to take this away? What about sleep? Isn't sleep something that you do again to relieve yourself from suffering? You know, when have you slept best? Is it when you're not feeling tired, or is it when you're exhausted after a long and hard day's work? When you're really exhausted, when you have toiled all day long, when you're shattered, that's when you fall asleep. All you have to do is look at the bed and you're asleep. And the dakka gaman nindena kiyala kiyanne. I remember when I used to go to school in Sri Lanka, sometimes I used to fall asleep on the bus on my way home from school. And usually I wake up about 4 or 5 halts after I should have woken up. Happened to me plenty of times. Sometimes I fall asleep standing on my feet. So you see, again, sleep is something that we do to relieve ourselves from suffering. So again, no matter what pleasure that you go looking for, that pleasure can only be really enjoyed if you're suffering before that. Now, I want you to look around this room. Take a moment to look around. Study all the things you're seeing right now. Can you name one object that has not been brought into this world to relieve you from vexation, to relieve you from suffering? Name one object. Fan, we talked about. What about the speakers? It's because you want to hear things. Remember, I talked to you 2 weeks ago, and I think I asked you, well, let's forget about 2 weeks ago. If I asked you to go into a dark room, a black dark room, how long can you stay in there? There's no sound, there's nothing to look at. How long can you be in a dark room? 5 minutes before you go mad? Why? Because you want to look at things. You want to hear things. So what do you think speakers are there for? To help you hear better. To relieve you from this stress and from this vexation, from this suffering of wanting to hear. That's what these speakers are for. What about the chairs you are sat on right now? Why were chairs invented? People, what? Can you not sit on the floor? Of course you can. Just like you're doing right now. But you feel more comfortable sat on a chair. So you sit on a chair. And when you want even more comfort, what you do? You bring yourself a cushioned chair. Each time what you're doing is relieving yourself from pain, relieving yourself from suffering. Why do you think these things have grills all around? To let the air in. Why do you need the air? Well, your bodies are heating up. You need some ventilation. Why is there a Buddha statue? Ah, that's a good one. Why do you need a Buddha statue? Of course. If I were to tell you, you know, the Buddha was this kind of person, he was, you know, he had, you know, this is what he looked like, this was what his physique was like. Now, you want to be able to visualize that. To help you visualize that, it's difficult when you have to imagine it for yourself. So what do? You create a statue, or at least you paint a picture. Now all you have to do is look at it. You don't have to use your imagination after that. Using imagination is really hard, isn't it? But looking at a picture, that's easy. Everything that you see around here, what about this water? Why is this water here? Is that not to relieve me from suffering? Why is this recorder here? Well, someone wants to listen to this later on. Why do we think we're discussing the Dhamma? Why do we think we are preaching the Dhamma? Isn't the Dhamma something to relieve you from something else? What is the Dhamma to relieve you of? Sansara. The suffering of sansara. So everything that we do, ladies and gentlemen, is to relieve ourselves from suffering. Every object that you see around you, every object that has been brought into this world is to relieve ourselves from suffering. Doesn't that give you enough evidence? Isn't that enough evidence for you to realize that this world is 24/7, 365 days a year, suffering? If you can't name one thing that you do, if you can't point at one object that you use, that you make use of, to relieve yourself from suffering, if there's not one that is not for that purpose, well, isn't entire existence just full of suffering? Well, someone might say, what about volunteering? Isn't that? I don't do that because I'm suffering. How many times can you go and give a poor man some food when you offer him that food, what he does is he spits at you in the face. How many times will you do that? Say you're volunteering at a hospital and you're attending to patients. If every time you go and attend, you wash them up, you clean them up, you fed them, their response is, get out, you bloody idiot. If that's how they respond to you, how many times are you going to do that? Not many. Even through volunteering, you're looking for what? A smile on another man's face. When you see that smile, that makes you feel good. You feel that you're contributing to society. You feel that you're giving something, and in the process of giving, you're feeling good inside. So you're always doing something to feel good inside, which means you're not feeling good right now. That's why you're always wanting to do something. That's why you're always wanting to bring something. That's why you always wanting to make something. So everything in this world, this is why what we have here is Sankata. Sankata. What are Sankata? Sankruta. Sang is to bring together. To bring things together is sang. Sangeeta. What is Sangeeta? When you bring together notes according to a certain rhythm, what do you get? Sangeeta. Sang is always bringing things together. On some occasions, we can also describe sang as being avidya trishna. Avidya being ignorance and trishna being attachment. That's how we get sansara. When you think to yourself that this process of the coming together of ignorance and attachment and the product of that is great, let's do more of that. What is the conclusion that you've come to? Sang sara. What is sara? Great, full of essence, useful, meaningful. What is asara? Useless, meaningless, essenceless. So for as long as you are in this, at least in this view, for as long as you have a view that sang is sara, are you an Arya? Do you think you're an Arya? If for as long as you think sang is sara, සංසාරයි කියලා කියන තාක්කල් ඔබ ආර්යද? නෑ. You can't be an Arya. Why is that? Because riya ariya karanna nemeya. To stop this vehicle that takes you through samsara, if you think sang is sarai, if you think sang is great, sang is meaningful, sang is essence, you know, full of essence, full of pleasure, it's the best thing in town. When are you going to stop this vehicle? You're not going to stop this vehicle. So to become an Arya, you have to realize that sang is not sara, sang is what? Asara. When you come to the understanding that this sang, this process of the coming together of ignorance and attachment, and the product of that, which is bhavaya, existence, is asara, it's meaningless. Nothing's left at the end of it. How so? I'll explain to you later on, perhaps maybe next week. Then you come to the understanding, yes, I do not want to go through this process again and again and again and again. I mean, think about all the things you've done so far in life. Growing up, all the things you did. Earning money, buying houses, property, having kids, going to school, getting yourself a job. You know, these are all the things that you did, trying to work hard so you can make this life work. You know, now that you're alive, you've got to make a living, you've got to make life work. So you're doing all these things. At the end of it, what's left? What's left at the end of it? Absolutely nothing. None of the houses you built, you're going to take with you. None of the money you've earned, you're going to take with you. None of the cars you own, you're going to take with you. Doesn't matter how much you have in your bank account, you're not going to take one penny of that with you. But yet you've dedicated your life to doing what? Earning. Earning, gathering, building, making. What about me? I've stopped earning. I've stopped making. I've stopped building. I've stopped gathering. Am I still not alive? Do you really have to do all these things to make life work? What about me? Am I dead? There is me and there are 40 other monks in our monastery. They're all living a very happy life. Unlike you, they don't have to go to school. Yet we give them an education. We don't educate them in the sciences that you need to go and become the best in this world. Because that's what you need to learn if you live a lay life. You have to be the best. But what we teach them Pali, we teach them Sinhala, we teach them science, so as in science and technology, we teach them mathematics, so that they can have an analytical mind. They're able to have a discussion. They can debate things intelligently, and they have what they need to study the Tripitaka, to listen to the Dhamma, to understand the Dhamma. Because it doesn't matter what you learn at the end of it, you're going to leave all that aside. All of that you're going to leave behind. So if you're going to learn, then might as well learn something that's going to help you be happy. Happy in the sense, learn something that's going to help you put a stop to this journey. That's going to help you become an Arya. Did you not learn in your last birth? Did you not study? Did you not go to school? Did you not earn a living? Work hard? We've done all these things so many times before. So many times before. What's left? This is the problem that I have every day. What's left? Last time we had the sermon, remember we talked about how living is nothing but one of these six processes. What are the six processes? Do you remember now? Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, and then thinking. It's one of these six. So it's one of these six that you do non-stop From the moment you come into this world, from to the last breath, to your last breath. It's one of these six things. In different combinations, in different orders, you do this. One after the other, one after the other, one after the other. All the sights you've seen so far, what's left? What has it left you with? See, this is how you begin to understand that this is Asarai. There is no essence in this. Until you understand this, you cannot become an Arya. Until you understand this, you can't understand why people keep on saying this samsara is asara. What have you been doing in this samsara? Can you name any one thing other than this six? Okay, you did a job, you earned money, you had kids. Doing all these things, what actually happened inside you? With your eyes you saw, with your ears you heard, with your mouth you tasted, with your tongue you tasted, with your nose you smelt, with your body you felt, and with your mind you thought. All the things that you worked hard to earn, to gather, to build and to make, helped you do those six things as you wished. You weren't satisfied with eating what you could find at home. Unlike us at the monastery, we just eat whatever gets put into our alms bowl, it doesn't matter what it is. But as when I was a lay person, that I wasn't happy with that. There were things that I liked to eat and there were things that I didn't like to eat. So what did I have to do? I had to do a job. I had to earn a living. I had to do a job so I could earn money to buy the things that I liked to eat. I had to do a job so I could earn money so I could avoid eating the things that I didn't like to eat. I had to do a job so I could earn money so I could live in a place that I liked, a house that I liked, and not live under a bus stop. So to do the things that I like to do, the way I like to do it, I had to do what? Study, work hard, do a job, earn money, etc., 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 etc. But ultimately what's happened inside me, if you just take the rest of the world outside away and just observe how have I changed ever since then? Think about you from when you were a young child, when you were the age of, how far back can you remember? 10 years of age, can you remember then? When you were 10? Okay, take 10 years of age. If you are 10 right now, think of when you were 2 years old, if you can remember back then. How have you changed from that point to now? Your body has changed, obviously. How has your body changed? Depending on the things you eat, and perhaps you might have gotten to, perhaps you know you got injured. You know, if you had 5 fingers in your hand when you was a 10-year-old boy and you got into a fight and someone broke your finger, now you only have 4. So that could have been one way you changed. Or perhaps when you were 10, you could see with your own 2 eyes, now you need 4. Or perhaps when you were 10, you could walk with your own 2 feet, now you need 3. Why? Walking stick. So your body has changed, no question there. What else has changed? Your mind has changed. When we say your mind has changed, what's changed really is the way you think. Right? It's the way you think that's changed. Of course you have memories and the way you think has changed. Is there anything else that's really changed? Okay, you now have a house, you have a car, you have a wife, you have a husband, you have 3 kids. You have lots of money in your bank account. But that's not you. That's the things that belong to you. I'm talking about you. Of course, your body belongs to you as well. But, you know, to keep it simple, let's say your body is part of you, just for the sake of this argument. So your body has changed and your mind has changed. So all the other things that you worked hard to earn and to gather and to build and to make, what's happened to them? They just come and go. They came into your life and then they went. Your body changed, your mind changed. Your body, we can see what the evidence of change. You've aged, your teeth have fallen, your hairs have grayed, your eyesight is weaker than it used to be, you can't get up on your own 2 feet, you need someone to help you stand up. All these things, your body has changed. But what about your mind? What's changed in the mind is Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana. The only things that you've been doing since the age of 10 up till now, or the age of 2 up till until whatever age you are now, if you're still young, is you saw sights, sounds, tastes, smells, touch, and you thought. That's the only thing that's happened. Nothing else. All your houses, that's not you. That's something that belongs to you, but that's not you. Your memory, let's take that as being part of you. Has it left you with anything else other than that? All the sights you saw, aren't they all but a memory? All the sounds you heard, aren't they all but a memory? All the smells, aren't they all but a memory? All the tastes, aren't they all but a memory? You got nothing left. Nothing left but a memory. If you came along to the last sermon we had, I asked you a question. How many hours of sleep do you get a day? How many hours do you sleep a day? 6? 7? Any other answers? 5? When you sleep, you do what? Dream. When you wake up from sleep and you had a dream, how do you know you had a dream? You can remember. What's left from your dream? What's left from your dream? If you built a house in your dream, do you actually have the house now? Do you? No. So what's left in your dream, from your dream? A memory. All the sights you saw in your entire lifetime, all that's left is what? A memory. All the sounds you heard, all that's left is a memory. All the time you slept and you woke up, what's left is a memory. Why do you lie to me and say that you only sleep for 5 hours a day, when actually you're sleeping 24 hours a day? What do you do 24 hours a day? You watch things. What's left at the end of it? A memory. What do you do 24 hours a day? You listen. What's left at the end of it? A memory. What's left at the end of your sleep? A memory of the dream you had. Aren't they the same then? So what you've been doing all day long is sleeping and dreaming. Because all you're left with is a memory. Is that what you've got this most valuable and most precious human life for? To dream all day long? To leave nothing behind but a memory? See, the problem is this. Even the Buddha says, if you are, rather than use your eyes and your ears and your 5 senses to seek sensual pleasures, it's better to go sleep than do that. There's a sutra in which the Buddha, there's a discourse in which the Buddha teaches that. If I remember right, it's Agnikandopama Sutra. Check, if it's not that, it's Aditya Pariyaya Sutra, but I think it's Agnikandopama Sutra. If you check that discourse, which is in the Majjhima Nikaya, he teaches that if you are not practicing the path, and rather than using your senses, your 5 senses, to go seek sensual pleasure, it's better to go sleep. Why does he say that? At the end of both, you're just left with a dream. You're left with nothing but a memory. But while you're awake, the things that you do are all karmas. When you do a karma, what happens? You get a vipaka. In your dream, no karma, no vipaka. It's a get out of jail free card. That's what a dream is. That's what sleeping is. You can do whatever you like. You can do whatever you like in your dream, and it's not going to bear consequences on real life. But whatever you do in your real life, the time you're awake, who's going to have to suffer the consequences? You are going to have to suffer the consequences. So you're left with the memory. You're left with the consequences. Why did you age? Do you like aging? Do you like falling ill? Why do you fall ill? Because you're born. Why were you born? Because in a previous birth, you looked at rupa, you looked at sights and thought, wow, I'd like to see a few more of those, please. You listened to sounds and thought, that's nice. I'd like to listen to a few more of those, please. Rupa, shabda, gandha, rasa, sparsha, dhamma. You chased after all six of these things. And they left you with what? A memory in your last birth and nothing else to your name. But all the karmas that you did gave you the vipaka of this human life. Now you have a human body which is a vipaka of the karma. Have you ever seen in a cinema hall when you go and watch a movie, you look at the seat next to you and there's a pair of eyes come to watch a movie? Ever seen that? No, a pair of eyes never comes to watch a movie. A pair of eyes needs a body to come watch a movie. Have you ever seen a pair of ears run around at a pub or a rock concert listening to music? No, that doesn't happen. What do you really value? You value your eyes. Do you value your spleen? What pleasure does your spleen bring you? What pleasure does your liver bring you? Okay, what about your bladder? Are you really fond of your bladder? Are you really fond of your buttocks? No, but what are you fond of? Your eyes. You know, something comes running at you, or someone throws something at you. What do you cover up first? Your kidneys? No, you cover your eyes. Because your eyes are really what? Precious. Do I sound like Gollum? Precious. So you cover your eyes. Then you cover your ears. Why? Because these are the things that you use to observe the world. Your mind wants to see more. It wants to hear more. But what's left at the end of it? Just a memory. But who's got to protect all this? You have to protect them. To protect your eyes, you're born with a body, with a heart that has to beat. You have lungs that has to supply blood to your eyes, to your ears, to your tongue, to your body so you can feel. You see, these are the things that you like and you value and you're attached to. The feeling or the sensation of sight, the sensation of sound. You like to hear, you like to taste, you like to smell, you like to feel tactile sensations. But in your craving to have these, you have been gifted. It's a curse more than a gift. You have been cursed with a body that ages, that falls ill, that can't sit in one place for 5 minutes. How many times did you have to adjust yourself from the time you sat for this sermon? Why? Well, it's this body that you have. I told you at the start, your wish might be to stay awake, but you will fall asleep through the course of this sermon. Why? Because your body is not to your liking. If it were to your liking, ladies and gentlemen, you wouldn't age, would you? You wouldn't grow old. You wouldn't fall ill. You wouldn't have trouble going to the toilet. You wouldn't have to eat 3 meals a day. Do you really enjoy eating? You enjoy taste, but do you enjoy eating? When you have to keep chewing your food? Have you not experienced where your cheeks start to hurt after a while? And what about your tongue? Isn't your tongue playing the great escape when it's trying to not be chewed up through, you know, with, from your teeth? That's the great escape. Every time you're chewing your food, your tongue is caught between 32 enemies. Doesn't know at what point it's going to get hurt. Have you never bitten your tongue? How did that feel? The other day, I don't know what time we need to finish. It's 5 o'clock now. I think there's another sermon that I need to go to after this. So best I finish. But I'll give you this story to you. Because I think there's something that's really valuable that you can take from this. Last week, there was a gentleman that came to meet me, and he said, Swami Nohan, sir, can you please come and speak to this lady that came? She's come with us. She's been diagnosed with cancer. It's terminal. What does that mean? There's no saving her now. She's going to die. She's got terminal cancer, and it started off in her breast, and now it's spread to her liver, and she's going to die in a matter of weeks or months, if not weeks. And he asked me, could you please come and speak to her? So I said, sure, you know, why don't you bring her here? You know, he said, well, actually, we've come with a small gathering of about 10 to 15 people. I said, okay, that's even better. So we went, and I found a little quiet corner in part of our monastery, and we sat down. And obviously, just like you are sat here today, there were lots of women there. So I couldn't tell which one in particular. I started off by saying, I know that one of you have a problem. I don't know which one of you that is, and I want you to keep it that way. I then asked a question. Can you put your arms up if you know for sure that you don't have a cancer? I'll ask you that question now. Can you put your arms up if you know for certain that you don't have a cancer? How long does it take to diagnose a cancer? Sometimes weeks, sometimes months, sometimes a good few years. When did that cancer start? Sometimes months, sometimes weeks, sometimes years ago. So which one of you can say then, I am certain that I don't have a cancer? None of you can say that. Can I say that? I just don't know that I have a cancer yet. You just don't know that you have a cancer yet. So I asked the question, why are you all having a long face about this one person that you all know, but I don't know? You're all crying that this person's going to die. What, don't you have a cancer? How do you know? Why do you all live like you don't have cancers? Why are you all sobbing over this woman thinking, oh, she's going to die in the next few months? What, so you're okay? You don't have a cancer? People think. When you see someone in the hospital, when you see someone hurt, when you see someone aging, when you see someone have a cancer, everyone starts to cry. Oh, poor person. Poor lady, look what's happened to her. Poor man, look what's happened to her. He's going to die in the next few months. I then asked another question. Right, so you think she's going to die, right? Can you please now give me a list of all the 14 or 15 people here in the order that you're going to die? Starting from one.